Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 61.
Sun Wukong thinks he's got the fan. He's walking away.
He's feeling, well, pretty pleased with himself. The term used is honestly, basically happy and satisfied. He thinks he's won.
And there's that great simile the source uses. A victorious cat, happy as a tiger. What's that telling us?
It really paints a picture of his overconfidence, doesn't it? He feels powerful, like a tiger, but maybe he's just been a bit lucky, like a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It suggests he's let his guard down, not really watching his back.
Yeah, basking in the glory a bit too much.
And that definitely proves to be a mistake almost immediately. While Wukong's having his mental victory lap, the real Bull Demon King catches up.
Okay.
He sees Wukong, sees the fan, but crucially, he realizes Wukong knows how to use it, like the proper way.
Which is bad news for the Bull King. Getting fanned, what is that, 100,000, 8,000 miles? That'd ruin everything for him.
Totally. So instead of just attacking right then where he risks getting blown away, he comes up with a plan, a trick.
Involves some deception.
Yeah, he knows Tang Monk is waiting back there. And he knows Wukong's companions, Pigsy and Sandy. He's met them before back in his demon days. So he decides to turn himself into Pigsy.
Using Wukong's own playbook against him. Does the source tell us how Bull Demon King stacks up against Wukong in terms of power or skills?
It does, actually. It says he also has the 72 transformations, same as Wukong. And his fighting ability is Yuhan, so on par with Wukong's skill.
But there's a catch.
A small one. The text mentions his body is a bit, maybe, clumsier, less agile, not quite as nimble as Wukong. So same magic, same fighting skill, just physically a little less fluid. So Bull Demon King puts the plan into action, transforms into Pigsy, takes a shortcut, and intercepts Wukong.
And Wukong, still feeling like that victorious cat, completely buys it. No suspicion at all.
None mentioned. The fake Pigsy calls out. Wukong's happy to see him, asks where he came from.
And the fake Pigsy spins a story.
Lays it on thick. Says the master was worried, you know, about Wukong facing the Bull King alone, so he sent him to help out.
Right. And this is where Wukong's pride really kicks in, isn't it? He doesn't question it. He just starts bragging.
Oh, absolutely. He gives Pigsy the whole play-by-play of how incredibly clever he was.
What does he list? What are the tricks he boasts about?
He recounts fighting Bull Demon King to a draw, then following him down to the Azure Wave Pond, so where the Bull King was having drinks with some dragon spirits.
Okay, then what?
Then he says he transformed into a crab to sneak in.
A crab, right.
And from there, he managed to steal Bull Demon King's ride, that powerful, water-repelling, golden-eyed beast.
Uses the beast to get to the cave.
Yep. Transforms into Bull Demon King himself, goes to the cave where Rexxasi, Bull Demon King's wife, is.
And how does he say he got the fan from her? This is where the source gets quite specific, right?
Very specific. It uses this. That woman and old son became a temporary husband and wife for a bit. The source is quite direct that this deception involving, you know, some level of intimacy was how he got the fan.
Wow. Okay. That's quite a detail. So he's telling this whole story, the fight, the crab, the stolen beast, impersonating the husband, this interaction with Rexxasi, all this effort. How does the real Bull Demon King, disguised as Pigsy, use this?
He listens to this whole exhausting tale and sees his opening. He says something like, "Wow, brother, you worked so hard. Here, let me carry the fan for you." And Wukong, completely puffed up, thinking Pigsy is impressed and sympathetic, he just hands it over.
Just like that. No second thought.
Doesn't seem like it. He's totally fooled. And Bull Demon King, now holding the real fan, knows the secret word or gesture, right? E, we to shrink it. Exactly. The text says he Fi Chulol does some kind of spell and zap. The fan shrinks instantly. Wuchi back down to the size of an apricot leaf.
And then comes the big reveal.
Oh, yeah. He changes back to his true form, Ujia, and hits Wukong with that perfect line. Ujiji, you rotten monkey. Recognize me now.
Ouch. How does Wukong take being played so badly?
He gets it immediately. First, self-blame. My bad. That was my fault. And then comes that fantastic quote. It really captures the feeling. Year after year, I hunt geese, but today a little goose pecked out my eye. Perfect. The master trickster got tricked. So naturally, Wukong's furious. He attacks with a staff. Bull Demon King goes to use the fan on him. But what happens?
Nothing. It completely fails. And this ties back to an earlier detail the source mentioned. Remember when Wukong turned into that tiny insect to get inside Raksasi?
Well, the text says while he was in there, he accidentally swallowed the wind-fixing pill. He subconsciously swallowed it.
Huh. Accidental magic protection. The source says it made his insides, uta, firm, and his skin and bones, solid. Solid.
Precisely. So when Bull Demon King tries to fan him, it's like trying to fan a rock. Couldn't move him an inch.
How does Bull Demon King react to that?
He panics. Realizes his ultimate weapon is useless against Wukong now, so he quickly shoves the tiny fan into his mouth to keep it safe and pulls out his sword to fight properly.
Right, so now it's a real fight. Staff versus sword. And the source includes a poem about this.
Yeah, the first poem calls it a run, a really fierce battle, and it emphasizes its buta, all because of the plantain fan.
The banana fan.
But it also nails the core dynamic.
Fierce Jershuga. The careless sage tricked someone. The bold Bull King tricked him right back to get the fan.
And the poem mentions the insults flying, too. Ek rough words, fierce tempers. Bull Demon King accusing Wukong about his wife. Wukong firing back about being tricked. It's personal. Very heated.
Okay, while that aerial battle is raging, let's switch back to the ground. Tang Monk is still waiting at Flame Mountain. How's he doing?
He's really suffering. The source says the heat is ogafis so. It's like he's being steamed. He's anxious. He's thirsty. He's just miserable and getting impatient.
And he asks the local earth god, the Doku, about Bull Demon King's strength, right?
Yeah, he wants to know what Wukong's up against. And the earth god confirms it. Hey, Kusanesha. Basically, yeah, this guy's powerful, limitless magic, a true match for Sun Wukong.
Okay, so that confirmation, plus the fact Wukong's been gone for a whole day now.
Right, much longer than usual. Tang Monk connects the dots and figures Wukong must be in a serious fight. He decides Wukong needs help.
So he tells Pigsy and Sandy to go find him.
Exactly. Go meet up with Wukong and assist.
But Pigsy raises a logistical point. It's late, and he doesn't know the way to Mount Gilei.
Which is fair enough, but the Earth God pipes up again, saying, hey, I can guide you. Tang Monk is super grateful and agrees, sending Pigsy off with the Earth God. Sandy stays behind.
Okay, so Pigsy gets ready. The description is great. Chest scan. He shakes himself up, adjusts his robe, grabs his rake. He's ready to go.
Off they go on the clouds, heading east with the Earth God leading.
And soon they hear it.
Yep. Loud battle cries, rolling winds. They look, and there they are, Wukong and Bull Demon King going at it.
The Earth God gives Pigsy a nudge.
Pretty much. Hey, Marshal Tian Peng, Pigsy's old title. Aren't you going to jump in? So Pigsy gets his rake ready and yells out, Senior Brother, I'm here! Now remember, Wukong is still absolutely furious about being tricked by the fake Pigsy just moments before. So when the real Pigsy shows up yelling, I'm here!
Oh no. What's Wukong's first reaction?
He immediately blames him. Oh, useless oaf. You've messed up so many important things for me. Poor Pigsy. He just got there to help. He's totally confused. He explains, look, Master sent me. I got lost. The Earth God had to show me the way. How did I mess things up?
And that's when Wukong clarifies what actually happened.
Right. He tells Pigsy, that Bull Demon King, he transformed to look like you, pretended to meet me, and conned me out of the fan. Hearing this, that he was impersonated, and worse, that it caused Wukong to blame him, that just flips a switch in Pigsy, the source says, well, Pigsy heard this and became enraged.
Especially because it caused friction between them, the source notes, made the brothers fight.
Exactly, and Pigsy's rage is, well, it's something to behold. He goes straight for Bull Demon King.
How's his attack described?
Down to her! Just swinging that rake wildly, aiming anywhere, everywhere, utterly furious. And the insults. Pigsy yells things like, Jella Ifo, you swollen-skinned plague victim. And later, Nantu, which is like, you naughty-hearted jaundice. Just pure visceral anger.
And how's Bull Demon King holding up against this onslaught? He was already fighting Wukong.
Yeah, the text says he's Q-skuck, exhausted, his spirit's weary from fighting Wukong all day. He just can't handle Pigsy's attack. The rake is too fierce. He can't block it effectively. He has to fall back, retreat from Pigsy. But as Bull Demon King tries to get away from Pigsy, guess who pops up?
The Earth God again.
Yep. This time with backup, oh, these underworld soldiers, they block Bull Demon King's path.
And the Earth God lays down the law. Reminds him this pilgrimage is a big deal. divinely protected, all the gods, all of heaven supports it, known everywhere. So
he basically tells him, use the fan, quench the fire, let them pass. Or else, the Ugres, being Durjes, heaven will punish your sin and you will be executed. A pretty clear threat.
You'd think that would work. But Bull Demon King, he doesn't back down, does he?
Not one bit. He gives this incredibly passionate refusal, just unloading all his anger at Wukong. He lists the grievances right from the source. Puta search, that damn monkey stole my son, bullied my concubine, tricked my wife. He's always been outrageous.
His personal beef with Wukong is just too strong.
It completely overrides the divine threat. He says he'd rather swallow Wukong whole and defecate him out to feed the dogs than lend Wukong the fan.
Wow, that's graphic. Shows you just how deep that hatred runs.
So while the Bull King is venting, Pigsy catches up. More insults, demands the fan, threatens his life.
Nowhere to run now. Bull Demon King has to turn and face Pixie's rake again, fighting with his sword.
And Wukong sees his chance. With Bull Demon King occupied by Pigsy, Wukong jumps back in, raises his staff to help Pigsy.
So now it's two against one. And the source gives us another poem for this part.
Yeah, the second poem. It describes the Tudu Fi, the three parties clashing. It names them perfectly. The Tudu, the refined pig spirit, that's Pigsy. The Tu Tudu Fu Bumitou Dusarpa Thusa, the monster bull, and the Tu Gunufi, the heaven-stealing, Tao-achieving monkey Wukong.
And it mentions their weapons.
Rake, sword, staff. And it paints this amazing picture of the chaos. They fought so hard, the stars lost their light. The moon went dim and the whole sky filled with this cold, dark mist. Just epic.
They fought all night.
Sun Wukong, Zubaji, the Bull Demon King, even the local Earth God and those Yin soldiers, they were locked in combat continuously, no clear winner, all through the night.
Wow. All night. That's just relentless.
It really is. And as dawn breaks, the fight moves towards the Bull Demon King's own territory. They end up at his Moyen Cave on Jile Mountain, his home turf.
Uh-oh. Retreating to the home base usually means one thing.
Yeah, reinforcements. And you guessed it. Just as they get near the cave, the Bull Demon King's concubine, the Jade Face Princess, she hears the fighting.
She gets involved.
Instantly. The source says she sends out her own forces, over 100 demons, to help him out.
Okay, that changes things. Sudden backup. How does that hit our guys?
It hits hard and fast. Baji, the text says, is pretty much overwhelmed straight away. He has to pull back.
And Wukong.
Wukong uses his cloud somersault, you know, gets himself out of the immediate encirclement, but the Yin soldiers kind of scatter.
So the princess's demons basically win that little skirmish for the Bull King.
For the moment, yes. It's a tactical win. It gives him the breathing room he needs to pull his forces back into Moyen Cave and slam the door shut. He's regrouping in his stronghold.
Okay, so battle over for now. Bull King's inside. But outside, Wukong's still processing, right? Something's bothering him.
Yeah, you can almost hear his frustration. He's like, we fought all night and he wasn't even tired. And he mentions how surprisingly fierce those demons were, the ones the jade-faced princess sent.
He's impressed almost.
Seems like it. But then Baji jumps in with a really sharp question, actually.
Oh, what does he ask?
He asks about the delay from the day before. He says something like, hold on, you left Master around 9 or 11 a.m. yesterday, but you didn't start fighting the Bull King until, like, 3 or 5 p.m. Where were you for those couple of hours?
Yes. The missing time. I was wondering about that. So Wukong has to explain himself.
He does. And it turns out quite a lot happened in those missing hours. It's a whole mini adventure.
Okay, lay it on us. What did Wukong do?
Right. So he says he got to the mountain instantly. First, he bumped into the jade-faced princess and, well, basically scared her off with his staff.
Okay.
She then called out the Bull King, and that's when they had that first fight. Lasted about an hour.
The one we knew about.
Exactly. But then the Bull King gets invited to some banquet and just leaves.
Leaves the fight.
Yeah. But Wukong's not letting it go. He follows the Bull King to this place called
Scattered Rock Mountain by Po Pon.
By Po Pon, okay.
Following him to a party. What's his plan?
Classic Wukong. He transforms into a crab.
A crab? Seriously?
Yep, a crab. Sneaks into the banquet to, you know, listen in, figure things out. And while he's there, he pulls off something pretty bold.
What's that?
He steals the Bull King's ride, the water-repelling golden-eyed beast.
Huh. Okay, Wukong.
And he doesn't stop there. He then transforms himself to look exactly like the Bull Demon King, hops on the stolen beast, and heads back.
Back to the Urchasa, the wife. Queen Mountain. Banana Cave.
You got it. Plan B, trick the wife again now that he looks like her husband.
And does it work this time?
Initially, yes. He fools her. She hands over
the banana fan.
Success. So he thinks.
Uh-oh. What goes wrong?
His big mistake. He tries the fan out immediately, makes it grow long, just like the instructions say.
Yeah.
But then he can't figure out the command to shrink it back down.
No. He got the magic fan, but didn't know the off switch.
Pretty much. He's just standing there, stuck with this enormous fan he can't handle. And guess who shows up while he's struggling?
The real Bull Demon King.
The real Bull Demon King. He sees Wukong looking like him, riding his beast, holding his fan, and he pulls off a counter scheme.
What does he do?
He transforms himself into Zhu Baji.
Into Baji. Clever.
Right. Walks up to Wukong, pretends to be his friend Baji,
mm-hmm.
and basically says, hey, let me hold that fan for you. And Wukong, maybe flustered or maybe just fooled, hands it over.
Oh, man. Tricked by a fake Baji. So that's what took 2 or 3 hours.
That whole sequence. Following, spying as a crab, stealing the mount, the deception, the fan fumble, getting tricked back. It all ate up the time.
Wow. Okay, that's quite a story. What does all that scheming back and forth tell you?
It really shows the layers here, doesn't it? It's not just Wukong being clever. The Bull Demon King is just as cunning, just as capable of transformation and deception.
It's a battle of wits as much as strength.
Exactly. And you see Wukong slip up, you know? Even the Great Sage isn't perfect. He got the fan, but missed a crucial detail about how it worked. Shows his limits. Or maybe just overconfidence.
Yeah, a rare mistake. So hearing this whole story, how the fan was won and then immediately lost again, how does Baji take it?
Oh, Baji completely loses it. Total despair. He uses this amazing phrase the source gives us, something like, this is like flipping a tofu boat in the ocean, gone through soup and water.
The tofu boat. What's that supposed to mean?
Think about it. Tofu is incredibly fragile, right? Trying to sail a boat made of it in the ocean, it's just going to dissolve. Gone. All that effort, soup and water, totally wasted.
Okay, yeah, I get the image. Pretty bleak.
It is. And Baji's reaction is just, forget it. Let's give up on the fan. Find another way around the mountain. He wants to turn back, essentially.
Just quit after all that.
That's Baji for you sometimes. Utterly frustrated. But the Earth God steps in here. He offers a different perspective.
The local spirit guy. What does he say?
He gently pushes back. He says, turning back, finding an easier route, that's taking a sideways path. A pangmen, the text calls it. It's not the true path of cultivation.
Like taking a shortcut isn't the right way.
Exactly. He even quotes an old saying, Xing Zi Yu Jing, basically, don't walk by shortcuts. He reminds them their master is waiting on the main path, the Zheng Lu, and they have to stick to it no matter how hard it is.
So it's framed as more than just getting past a mountain. It's about the spiritual journey itself.
Precisely. It reframes the whole struggle, and Wukong latches onto that immediately. He agrees completely with the Earth God.
He tells Baji off, I bet.
He does. Scolds him for talking nonsense about quitting. He says they absolutely have to face the Bull King again, settle things, and get that fan. No other way.
He finds his resolve again in that idea of the main path.
Definitely. And he even recites this short poem, you know, capturing that spirit.
Yeah.
Lines about gambling on victory, using skills, needing to contend for the fan, and linking it all to refining demons and cleansing dirt to reach the West.
Connecting the fight directly to their spiritual goal.
Right. And you know what? It actually works on Baji.
Really? Baji snaps out of it.
Amazingly, yes. The text says his whole attitude shifts. He's suddenly all enthusiasm, like, yes, 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 let's go, shi, 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 quack, quack, ooh.
Huh. That's quite a turnaround.
It is. And he even comes up with his own poem, echoing the sentiment. He talks about their elements, pig is wood, monkey is gold, and how the fan, representing water, is needed to overcome the fire mountain. And it ends with this idea of achieving their goal through constant effort, day, night, Zuji Zidi Kujingong. The Earth God gives the wisdom, Wukong gives the will, and even Baji finds the strength to recommit. Understanding the struggle is the path.
That's powerful. Okay, so, fired up with this new resolve, they don't wait around, do they?
No time wasted. Wukong, Baji, the Earth God, the Yin soldiers, they immediately go back on the offensive. Straight for Moyen Cave again.
And this time?
This time they don't knock politely. The source says they Dare Fensui, they smash the front gate to pieces.
Whoa. Okay, that'll get his attention.
You bet it does. Bull King hears his gate being demolished. He is furious, grabs his armor, his iron staff, storms out.
And he's yelling at Wukong, I assume.
Absolutely. Cursing him for being so insolent. And Baji gives it right back, cursing the Bull King. The fight is instantly back on.
And the source says this round is even worse.
Yeah, be a can fan Ching Ching, even more intense than the all-night battle they just had. The descriptions really emphasize the power divine weapons clashing, the Bull King fighting with ferocious strength. It's brutal.
Is there any, like, dialogue during this fight? Do we know what they're shouting?
We actually do. The text gives us a snippet. Wukong and Baji are yelling, "Why won't you just lend us the fan?"
Standard enough. What does the Bull King yell back?
Ah, his reply is really revealing. He shouts, "How dare you trick my wife? And the revenge for driving away my concubine and harming my son isn't even settled yet. And now you're back here smashing my door down."
Whoa, hold on. Deceive my wife, harming my son, driving away my concubine. This isn't just about the fan anymore, is it?
Not at all. That line makes it crystal clear. This is deeply personal for the Bull King now. He's fighting out of vengeance for Wukong deceiving Rakshasa before, maybe causing harm or distress to their son Red Boy in the past, and for Wukong scaring off the jade-faced princess just hours ago. It's a grudge match.
That completely changes the dynamic.
Okay.
Okay, so this super intense personal battle rages on. But eventually, the Bull King starts losing ground again.
Seems so. After maybe another 100 rounds or so, the text suggests Wukong and Baji together are starting to overpower him. He tries to retreat back into Moyin Cave.
But he can't, right? The entrance is blocked.
Exactly. The Earth God and the Yin soldiers are still holding the line there. He's cut off from his own cave.
So, trapped outside, what does he do?
Escape plan B. He throws down his armor, ditches his staff, shakes his body, and poof! Transforms into a swan and flies off.
A swan just flies away. Does Wukong see him?
Wukong's got sharp eyes. Baji and the Earth God apparently miss it, but Wukong spots the swan taking off.
And Wukong's not going to let him just fly away.
No way. The instant pursuit. Wukong transforms himself into a sea eagle, a predator bird, and goes straight after the swan.
Okay, here we go. This is the transformation chase scene.
This is it. And it's fast. Bull King, as the swan, sees the sea eagle coming, so he changes midair into a yellow hawk.
Wukong counters.
Wukong counters. Transforms into a black phoenix. Bigger, more powerful bird.
So the Bull King changes again?
Yep. Sees the black phoenix, shifts into a white crane, tries to fly south. Wukong becomes a red phoenix. The text calls it the king of birds. Checkmate in the air, basically.
Can't win as a bird. So he dives.
Dives down to the mountainside, transforms into a musk deer, pretends to just be grazing innocently.
Like Wukong won't notice.
Right. Wukong lands, instantly becomes a hungry tiger, ready to pounce on the deer.
So the Bull King has to fight or change again.
Changes again, panics, turns into a big golden spotted leopard to fight the tiger.
Wukong's move.
Wukong shifts into a golden-eyed Suani that's a fierce lion-like mythical beast. Roars like thunder, ready to eat the leopard.
He just keeps escalating. Does the Bull King have anything left?
One more try in this sequence. He transforms into a huge bear, like a man bear, charging forward, trying brute force, maybe?
And Wukong's final counter.
Wukong becomes an elephant, uses his trunk like a giant snake to try and wrap up the bear.
Wow. What strikes you most about that whole sequence? Just the sheer variety.
It's the speed, the variety, and how it's all strategy, you know?
Wow.
Predator prey, one form countering the other. It's not random. It's a high-speed, magical chess match, showing incredible mastery of shape-shifting from both of them, even while one is desperately trying to get away. You can just picture it.
Absolutely dazzling. But after all that, running out of animal forms, the Bull King decides to go big. Right.
He does. It's like he realizes he can't out-transform Wukong in these smaller forms. The source says he actually laughs, then reveals his Yuan Shen, his original true form.
Gorgeous.
A massive, absolutely enormous white bull. The description is intense head like a mountain ridge, eyes like flashing lightning, horns like iron towers, over 1,000 zhang long, 800 high, just immense, pure power. And he bellows a challenge at Wukong.
Okay, going nuclear, how does Wukong respond to that?
Wukong matches him. He also reveals his Yuan Shen, but his giant form. 10,000 zhang tall, head like Mount Tai, eyes like the sun and moon, mouth like a blood pool, teeth like door panels, and his staff grows right along with him to match.
So now it's giant Monkey King versus giant Bull King. Clash of the Titans.
Exactly. The text says their battle, Hunling Yao Shan, Jingxian Dong Day, it shakes the mountains and ridges, startles heaven and moves earth. It's the ultimate physical confrontation. The poem describing it connects back to the bigger things, this huge demonic obstacle versus the sheer force needed for spiritual progress, and still the need for that fan, that coolness, to quell the fire.
What does it usually mean in these stories when characters bust out their giant forms like this.
It often signals that finesse and trickery are done. It's down to raw power, the fundamental essence of their being clashing directly. It's the ultimate display of strength, maybe less about skill and more about sheer force of will and nature.
Makes sense. But even while this titanic battle is happening, they're not alone anymore, are they?
No. Right as the giants are fighting, reinforcements arrive, but this time it's not for the Bull King.
Who shows up?
A whole host of divine beings. The source lists them. All the celestial beings and the golden-headed guardians, 6 Jiya, 6 Ding spirits, and 18 Buddhist guardians. Basically, heavenly security and Buddhist protectors descend from the heavens.
Wow, that's serious backup for Wukong's side this time.
Absolutely. A major intervention. They arrive and immediately surround the giant white bull.
How does the Bull King react to being surrounded by gods and guardians?
Even then, the text says he's Gongran Buju, completely unafraid. Still in his massive form, he's using his horns, his tail, fighting them off on all sides, defiant to the last.
But he's totally outnumbered now. Pilgrims, earth spirits, heavenly forces.
The net has definitely closed. Facing this overwhelming force, he knows the giant form isn't working anymore. He rolls on the ground, shrinks back to his normal size.
And tries to run again.
Yeah. This time he bolts towards Guiyanshan Banana Cave.
Back towards the Rakshasa's place. His wife's cave.
Exactly. He's been driven from the concubine's mountain, can't get back into his own cave, so he retreats to his wife's territory.
And Wukong and the divine army.
They shrink down too and pursue him immediately. They manage to completely surround Guiyan Mountain, trapping the Bull King inside the banana cave. No way out.
So chased from one mountain, blocked from another, that's quite the escalation.
It really is. He's isolated, cornered, with multiple layers of power, earthly, heavenly, and the pilgrims themselves all focused on him, under siege. But the Bull King ducked into the banana cave with the princess.
Exactly. So Wukong was kind of stuck outside, waiting, a bit of a stalemate.
Until Pigsy shows up again. He'd been off on that side quest, checking out the Bull King's other place.
In the Moyun Cave. He comes back, and, well, he's got news. Pretty big news, actually.
Oh, yeah. Pigsy making an entrance. What was his report? He seemed pretty pleased with himself.
He definitely made his presence felt. Mm. So his report, success. He attacked the Moyun Cave, and he specifically says he killed the Bull King's other wife there. And he identifies her, after checking the body, as Jade Face Vixen. So confirming she was a fox spirit.
Okay, so the Bull King wasn't just tied to one spot. He had, like, multiple bases. And Pigsy took one out.
Completely. And not just the Vixen. Pigsy wiped out her whole retinue of demons, too. The text gives this whole list. Donkeys, mules, boars, badgers, foxes, deer, tigers, you name it.
Or real clean sweep. This.
Total cleanup. Then he burned the cave down for good measure. And, importantly, he found out from the local spirit that the Bull King had another home, which is why he hustled back to join Wukong.
Nice. Pigsy really came through on that. Handled business. Meanwhile, Wukong's earlier fight, that hadn't quite finished the job.
No, Wukong filled Pigsy in on that. Apparently quite the showdown before Pigsy got back. A classic transformation battle.
Oh, those are always good.
Right. Bull King turned into this enormous white bull that Tex says immensely large, just huge.
Okay.
And Wukong had to counter with his own giant form, the heaven-sustaining, earth-supporting technique. So picture these two titans just going at it.
Wow. A clash of giants.
Seriously. But even with some local gods jumping in to help Wukong, the Bull King managed to shrink back down to human form and escape into the banana cave.
And that's where the Iron Fan Princess was waiting.
Exactly. Wukong confirmed she was in there with him, which led to that standoff Pigsy walked into.
I bet Pigsy wasn't thrilled.
Not even slightly. The text really captures his impatience. He's like, why aren't we smashing our way in? We're just letting them sit in there, talking strategy, getting cozy.
Yeah, that sounds like Pigsy. No time for chit-chat.
None at all. So what does he do? He just walks up, takes his rake, his big weapon, and bam, smashes the stone cliff face and the gate of the banana cave right open.
Just like that.
Just like right. that. An attendant inside immediately runs to tell the Bull King and Princess what just happened.
And what was happening inside? Were they just chatting?
Pretty much. The Bull King was apparently right in the middle of telling the Iron Fan Princess about his big fight with Wukong.
Oh, the timing.
Right. So he hears the gate crash open and he gets furious. And then he does something interesting. He spits the fan out of his mouth and hands it to the princess.
Spits it out. Okay. And hands it to her. Like, hold this. I got to go fight.
Seems like it. He's clearly gearing up for round two. Mm. But her reaction when she gets the fan, that's the real surprise here.
What'd she do?
She starts crying. The text says her eyes were filled with tears, and she tells the Bull King, basically, "My king, just give the fan to the monkey. Tell him to leave."
Oh, really? After all this, she wants to give it up? That's a total 180 from before.
Isn't it? It's fascinating. Maybe she's just tired of it all, or maybe seeing Pigsy smash the gate made her realize, you know, this isn't going away easily.
Pragmatism kicking in, perhaps?
Could be. But the Bull King, absolutely not.
That grudge with Wukong runs deep.
Way too deep. He tells her, the thing might be small, but the hate is deep. He flat out refuses. Says he's going to fight again because of that old animosity.
So her practicality versus his stubborn pride and hate. Interesting dynamic.
Very. True to his word, he gears up, gets new armor, grabs two swords.
Ready for war.
Marches straight out of the busted cave entrance and runs right into Pigsy, who's basically standing right there. Bull King attacks him immediately.
And Pigsy holds his ground.
He defends himself, yeah. But the text says he retreats just a bit, drawing the Bull King further out. And that's when Wukong jumps back into the fray, right there outside the cave.
Okay, so it's 2-on-1 now.
It quickly becomes more than that. The Bull King whips up this strong wind, and the battle kind of shifts over to Queen Mountain. And the description of the fight, it's intense. Clouds everywhere, mist, ghosts weaving, gods howling, darkness.
Sounds apocalyptic, like a truly massive battle.
It really paints that picture.
Yeah.
And the text even points out the complex feelings involved. Wukong fighting his old sworn brother, ignoring their past.
Yeah, that adds a layer of tragedy.
It does. And Pigsy, he's just focused on the prize. Get the fan. While all around them, it mentions the gods are actively helping, trying to capture the Bull King. Plus, local land spirits and these Yin soldiers attacking from the sides.
So it really was a multi-front battle, not just Wukong and Pigsy anymore. The backup was already getting involved.
Absolutely. The Bull King is fighting like mad, blocking left and right, but even he can't handle this combined assault indefinitely. After about 50 rounds, the text says he's beaten in this direct fight.
Beaten, so he tries to run for it.
Exactly, he tries to escape. And this is where things get really wild. This is where the Divine Surprise Party kicks off.
Okay, I'm ready. What happened?
He tries to bolt north, blocked by a figure called the Power King of Secret Demon Rock from Mount Wutai.
Just some random, powerful guy.
Not random at all. The text explicitly states this Power King was sent by Shakyamuni Buddha himself.
By Buddha? Wow.
Yeah, specifically to set up a heavenly net to catch the Bull King.
Okay, north is blocked by Buddha's agent. What next?
Like he turns south. Blocked again. This time by the Power King of Purity and Coolness Cave from Mount Emei. Also sent, it says, by Buddha's command.
Buddha's got the border secured. East and west.
Same story. Tries east. Blocked by the Power King of Sumeru Mountain, sent by Tathagata, which is, you know, Buddha again. Tries west. Blocked by the undying and eternal king of Kunlun Mountain, sent by the Buddha of Great Buddha Central Command.
Hold on. Buddha deployed four incredibly powerful beings, one for each direction, just to trap this one demon king.
That's what the text says. It shows this wasn't just reacting. This was a planned, coordinated containment strategy from the highest level of the Buddhist cosmology.
That's an incredible amount of firepower focused on one guy. He must have realized he was cornered.
Oh, yeah. The text says he was terrified, regretting everything, realizing he was caught in this inescapable net, completely trapped on the ground.
So only one way out.
Up. He tries to fly straight up into the sky.
And I'm guessing that doesn't work either.
Not a chance. Waiting for him in the air, pagoda-bearing heavenly king Li Jing and his son, the powerful Prince Neza. So the Bull King is trapped, Buddhist net below, heavenly generals above. What does he do?
Desperate measures time.
You got it. He transforms back into his ultimate power form, a giant white bull.
Using those Hija, his iron horns, to charge right at Li Tianwang, it's raw power. A final gamble.
A direct assault on a heavenly king. And just then,
Sun Wukong arrives on the scene.
Perfect timing. And Neza fills him in.
Yeah, Neza quickly explains how they got there. Says they saw Buddha Tathagata.
Right.
Who then did stop a con, send a report straight to the Jade Emperor about the whole Flaming Mountain problem and Wukong needing help with the Bull King.
So you see the chain of command there. Buddha, Jade Emperor, Neza, and Li Tianwang dispatched.
Exactly. It clarifies why these heavy hitters showed up so fast. Wukong sees this massive bull form and is like, how do we even stop that?
Understandable question. And Neza's response.
Super confident. Basically, great sage, don't worry, just watch me handle this.
Love it. And he doesn't wait around.
No time wasted, he just yells, change!
Wait, instantly.
Three heads, six arms, just boom, full power mode.
That classic powerful image.
He leaps right onto the back of this giant charging bull.
Gets on top of him.
And takes out his demon slaying sword.
Ah, here it comes.
Swings it right at the neck.
And cuts its head clean off.
Brutal. End of story.
Not even close. This is the crazy part. As soon as the head is cut off, poof, a new one grows right back out of the neck, spewing black gas and golden light.
What? He regenerates. Instantly.
Nezzy keeps hacking. The text says he cut off the head over 10 times, and over 10 heads grew back.
That's insane. Okay, the Bull King is seriously powerful. That regeneration is terrifying.
It really highlights why he was such a major figure. Simple brute force. So Nezzy takes his signature fire wheels, somehow gets them onto the bull's horns, and then blows this mystical true fire at them.
True fire? Like extra potent fire?
Exactly. In this kind of mythology, true fire isn't just regular flames. It's often a spiritual fire that burns a demon's essence, something they can't just regenerate from easily. And it works. The Bull King starts roaring in agony from the burning.
Okay, that sounds like it's finally hurting him, but can't he just transform or run now?
That's where pagoda-bearing Heavenly King Li Jing comes back in. While Nez is burning him, King Li Jing uses his secret weapon, the demon reflecting mirror.
The classic demon revealing tool.
It does more than reveal here.
Mm.
King Li Jing uses it to lock the Bull King's true form, the bull form, in place. It prevents him from transforming again or escaping the fire.
So he's being burned by magical fire and he's pinned in place by a magic mirror.
Checkmate. Absolutely no way out. He's in agony, totally trapped by this combined Buddhist and heavenly power play.
So she gives up.
He cries out, "Don't kill me. I'm willing. I'll submit to Buddhism." Complete surrender.
Wow. After all that pride, all that fighting, just broken. So the Bull King is captured. Now, the fan.
Right. Nezzy immediately asks, "Where's the fan?" And the defeated Bull King admits, "My wife has it."
And how do they handle the giant surrendered bull? You can't just put handcuffs on that.
Nezzy uses his demon binding rope. He takes it, walks up to the giant bull, grabs its nose.
Oh, the indignity.
Right. Threads the rope right through its nostrils and leads him away like livestock.
Ouch. From mighty demon king to being led by the nose, that really drives the point home.
It really does. So Wukong then gathers everyone. All the Buddhist guardians who showed up, the heavenly generals, King Li Jing, Nezha, Pigsy, the local spirits, the Yin soldiers, this whole massive assembly.
Victory parade, basically.
Kinda, yeah. They all escort the captured white bull back to the entrance of the Ganana Cave.
Bringing hubby home. How does the Iron Fan Princess react to that sight?
Well, the Bull King calls out first, basically yelling, "Wife, bring out the fan, save my life."
Mm.
Hearing this, she reacts instantly and dramatically.
How so?
She rips off all her fancy jewelry and colorful clothes. Then she ties up her hair like a Taoist nun and puts on plain white robes like a Buddhist nun.
What's the meaning behind that sudden change in appearance?
It's hugely significant. She's shedding all the symbols of her status, her power, her wealth, her identity as this, adopting the simple dress of first Taoist, then Buddhist renunciants. It's a visual act of complete surrender and humility.
Yeah.
She's giving up the fight entirely and begging for mercy.
Comes out looking completely different, and she has the fan.
Yes, holding the fan, which the text notes is pretty big, about 12 feet long. She sees this huge assembly of divine power outside all the Buddhist figures, King Li Jing, Nezha.
Must have been terrifying.
Absolutely. She immediately falls to her knees and starts bowing repeatedly.
And what does she say? This is the moment of truth.
Her words are incredible. She pleads, basically, "Bodhisattvas, please spare my husband and me. I'm willing to give this fan to Uncle Sun so he can succeed."
Wait, Uncle Sun? She calls Wukong Uncle Sun? Sun Shushu. Seriously.
Seriously, that's the detail that just stops you. After everything, the fighting, the trickery, the animosity, calling him uncle, is this term of deep respect.
Total submission.
Complete and utter capitulation. It's not just giving up the fan. It's acknowledging Wukong's place, the power behind him, the whole hierarchy. It's absolute humility, probably a desperate gamble to save both their lives. It speaks volumes.
So she hands over the fan with this incredible gesture of respect and defeat. And that's it. They finally have it.
That's it. Wukong takes the fan, and the whole victorious assembly gods, guardians, pilgrims, they all hop on auspicious clouds and head off back on the road west. Tripitaka and Shaoxing.
Okay.
They're waiting near the mountain.
Yeah.
And the writing makes it really clear. They are deeply worried. Like, Sun Wukong's been gone a while now.
You can almost feel that anxiety coming off the page, can't you? They're genuinely scared, thinking the worst, probably.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they faced a lot. But this mountain, it feels almost unbeatable.
Mm.
And their main protector, Wukong, he's just vanished. Mm. They're vulnerable.
And then, boom, a total shift. The text talks about seeing auspicious clouds filling the sky, propitious light covering the ground. So it's not just Wukong wandering back.
Right.
And Tripitaka sees this incredible display, and his first thought is actually fear.
But Xia's saying he gets it immediately. It's fascinating. He's the one who calmed Tripitaka down, points out who it is. He says something like, that's the four great Vajras, the guardians, the six Jia and six Ding, you know, listing all these divine figures.
Wow.
He even spots Neza and Li Jing. So this isn't just random divine stuff. It's a specific, high-powered group of protectors. A big deal.
So Wukong didn't just come back alone. He brought backup, like serious, officially sanctioned celestial backup. This wasn't just a coincidence.
Exactly. And the four great Vajras basically confirm it. They speak right to Tripitaka, say something like, saintly monk, be happy. Buddha sent us to help.
Okay.
It really underlines that this obstacle, overcoming it, it's not just Wukong doing his thing anymore. It's got top-level divine approval and support now.
Right. So with this heavenly posse watching, Wukong steps up. He's got the fan. He goes to the mountain and gives it one big swing. What happens?
The text says, the flaming mountain's flames completely extinguish. Its light silently disappears. Poof. Gone. With the first swing.
Just like that.
Just like that.
But he doesn't stop. He swings again, right?
Yeah.
The second time.
Yep. The second fan brings this gentle breeze. It's described really nicely. Like a cool, soft wind starts to move.
Okay, breeze. And the third swing.
Third swing brings the rain. The sky fills with clouds and fine rain begins to fall.
So three swings. Fire gone, cool breeze, gentle rain. He's completely transformed the place.
Pretty much. And there's a poem right there in the text talking about how huge the mountain was, how tough it was, borrowing the fan, the help from the gods, and this key line, water and fire connecting, nature becomes balanced.
Ah, that sounds important. Like more than just putting out a fire.
Exactly. It hints at deeper ideas, you know, balance, harmony. But for the pilgrims, the immediate effect is just relief, huge relief. The text mentions Tripitaka feels his dryness and vexation removed, his heart cleared. They can finally breathe.
The heat's gone.
Yep, the immediate threat is over.
So the divine army, their job's done.
Seems like it. The source says the Vajiras thank Tripitaka and head back. The six Ding and six Jia go back up to keep watch. The other gods disperse. And Neza and his father take the bull demon king back to report to Buddha.
Okay, everyone's leaving. But wait, and there's a twist, right?
Yeah, good point. The local earth god is still hanging around, and crucially, so is the Rakshasa woman.
The original owner of the fan, the one Wukong tricked earlier.
That's her, held there by the earth god.
Yeah.
And she immediately starts pleading with Wukong. Please, great sage, have mercy, give me back the fan.
And doesn't Pigsy jump in?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Classic Pigsy. Before she can even really make her case, he's cracking jokes about selling the fan for snacks or something.
Ah, some things never change.
Right. But her plea this time. It feels different, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does seem more genuine. She reminds Wukong he promised to return it. You said you'd give it back after the fire was out.
Mm-hmm.
She admits she regrets causing trouble, says it was truly regretful but late. She acknowledges their journey, mentions she's cultivated a human form but hasn't reached, like, enlightenment yet.
Right, the positive outcome.
And she promises she won't cause problems again if he returns the fan. She wants to reform herself and cultivate her life.
It's a big shift in her attitude. The local earth god, he basically tells Wukong, look, she really knows how to put this fire out for good, cut off the root. Wukong picks up on this. I asked the locals before. They said fanning the fire only works for 1 year's harvest, then it flares up again. How do you really get rid of it for good?
Okay, so the quick fix wasn't the final answer.
Nope. And the Rakshasa woman has the key. She reveals the secret. To truly cut off the root of the fire, you just need to fan it 49 times in a row. Then it will never erupt again. Totally different scale, isn't it? So Wukong, now knowing what's really needed for a permanent fix, takes the fan.
And does the 49 swings.
He does. Uses his full strength 49 times.
And the result?
Immediate and pretty dramatic. Torrential rain pours down on the mountain. But here's the cool part. The source emphasizes the fan's magic is precise. It rains only where the fire was, but the sky is clear everywhere else.
Seriously? So the pilgrims standing nearby, they don't even get wet?
Nope. Dry as a bone. the magic is targeted.
Okay, now the obstacle is really gone. For good this time.
For good. They stay the night, rest up. And the next morning, Wukong makes good on his promise. He returns the fan to the Rakshasa woman.
He actually gives it back.
Yep. He even says, why? If I don't give it back, people will say I don't keep my word. He tells her to take it, go back to her mountain, stay out of trouble, basically sparing her because she's achieved a human form.
And her reaction? Does she seem genuinely changed?
It really seems so. She takes the fan, says a spell, turns it into like a tiny apricot leaf, and pops it in her mouth to keep it safe.
Huh.
She thanks everyone, vows to live in seclusion and work on her own spiritual path. And the text actually tells us she succeeded. Later, she also achieved that positive spiritual fulfillment. You know, the...
Jinga.
Wow, so she actually gets her own kind of enlightenment.
Yeah, finds her own path. And her name gets remembered in the scriptures. So both she and the earth god are, like, deeply grateful for how things turned out.
That's quite a turnaround for her. From antagonist to, well, someone on their own path to redemption.
And the pilgrims can finally move on. Past the mountain, feeling cool and refreshed. Not oppressed by that heat anymore.
Mm-hmm. Body's cool. Feet moistened. A total contrast.
And the section wraps up with another one of those meaningful couplets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something about water and fire.
Yeah. When water can and fire are harmonized, Tru Yuan combines. When water and fire are balanced, the great way is achieved.